All right, we're back after a 1 week absence. Although I guess it's been 2 weeks.
Yes, since you were gone for 1 week.
It's been 2 weeks since the last one, but then we say, I don't know, it's always very standard to say we're back after a 1 week absence or missing last week. I get whatever.
So, well, last time we put up a podcast, somebody left in the comments, oh, you didn't talk about baseball for the first few minutes, so I'm shut it down. Well, thank you, listener. So here we're going to talk about baseball immediately.
And no, let's not.
Have you ever counted the stitches in a baseball?
I have not, no.
I also have not. So I think we should talk about not that. but something we can talk about is the game of baseball. And
I guess. I don't know. I don't like enabling people who just complain about things, especially when they complain about things in a really dick way.
I kind of just want to be something to not talk about baseball at all. Just have, finally, an actual podcast where we just don't talk about baseball once. So we
already
blew it.
I agree. That would have actually been a way better idea, but we have no topics to talk about otherwise. We should have spent our planning phase thinking of that.
Well, I'm open to talking about Mountain Helens hikes, area hikes.
Well, we kind of covered them all, and I have no input on that. So just basically be you holding for it.
God, well, I'm not. I had your voice.
Screw you.
I think before we podcast, I should just like sing out loud or scream for like 15 minutes just to kind of get my vocal cords ready to have a really awesome voice so I can contend with you, because I hate the way I sound on podcasts. And then you're just all like smooth and sultry. You
need to get a better microphone.
It's not the microphone, though. I don't hate my voice, but I don't have as interesting a voice. And God, I just want your voice on waffles.
This is really uncomfortable for me.
Well, that's the only way I can contend. So Friday night, which is this night, because I think of this podcast is going to go up Friday, the Phoenix is facing the Yankees in Yankee Stadium.
Woo!
Many of you might be listening to this. I mean, it's not like all of you who listen to the podcast listen to it immediately. So several of you will be listening to this either shortly after Felix starts against the Yankees, or, in the case of some of you, several months after Felix starts against the Yankees, which is weird. I don't know how well these things stand the test of time, but I guess people just like listening to these. But Felix, Yankees, Friday night, for those of you listening to this way in the future, I'm talking about May 11th, 2012, Felix Hernandez starting against some Yankees pitcher in Yankee Stadium.
Hiroki Kuroda.
Oh, okay, so that'll be us. Whatever.
I've been really seeing him pitch before because I don't watch the National League.
I feel like he's probably going to look like he's going to look like probably what Ibukuma looked like the other day when he was good in relief.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow, look at those
bendy things. And
you throw a lot of things that are between 80 and 88 miles per hour. That's neat. So the Mariners are going to face him, and they'll probably not walk, and they'll hit some balls hard. Some of them might leave the stadium. Some of them might not. And so it's going to probably come down to Felix, as if I have any prognostication skills. So I think with Felix, we always, to some degree, look forward to Felix starts, but I think we also all look forward to them a little bit more when he's in Yankee Stadium. Am I incorrect or am I correct?
I look forward to them more, but it's only doubling your sample size to two.
Paint with as broad a brush as you can. Speak for all Mariners fans.
Yes, Jeff. That's how they talk. That's how you talk.
That's the Mariner fan.
This is why we don't invite you on the podcast. You, all of Mariner fans. Because you talk weird. And you smell.
Hey, I'm an Angels fan. This is what we sound like. Sound like Rex Sutler.
I really wish I could do voice impressions.
I also do. I think it would be...
Not as much as I wish I could speak a second language fluently, instead of in bits and pieces and hand gestures like I currently do, but it would be a fun skill to have. Or I don't know if no. Well, I guess it'd be a skill, but yeah, it'd be fun to have.
I guess it would depend on your assortment of people you can do impressions of. Would it be one of those things where you could hear a voice and then immediately do an impression, or do you have specific well-known people?
Yeah, either way would be kind of fun.
I guess the first one would be more awesome.
Yeah, the first one would obviously be more awesome. But
that'd be like musical prodigies, right?
Perfect pitch and all that kind of stuff. But I think it'd be kind of. I think it's probably be a similar skill as like picking up other languages, where if only I could speak Spanish as well as English, once I got past that hump of learning a second language fluently, it would make picking up other languages a little bit easier. So I think even if you only had a couple well-known like celebrities or personalities down as far as voice impersonation, it would at least you'd have kind of a base for how to modify your voice. And I think it's more about how to stay consistent in one different voice.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I could slip into like an accent for a little bit for like two or three words, but I don't really know how to stay with that accent and not have it waver.
Right.
It's almost like singing in a way. Like you got to hit a pitch and then stay at that pitch or right. key.
I mean, like an accent or impersonation isn't just about being able to do it for a few syllables or phrases. You need to, every single syllable has to have that accent.
Yeah.
So that's Rex Hudler impression, or like I can do the Dave Niehaus when he's calling Edgar's double, because I've listened to that a million times. Okay, but that's all I can do. I can't do Dave Niehaus.
Right.
I use those specific words. Even there, I'm terrible at it, but whatever. But baseball, and it's Felix and the Yankees. And that's fun to do. So here's a question for you. Obviously, I think a lot of it has been media-driven, but constantly we've heard trade rumors, or not trade rumors, not even trade rumors, but the Yankees saying, hey, trade Felix. And the Mariners being like, nah. So this comes up all the time. So do you think the Mariners trade with the Yankees? They're like, okay, well, we won't give you Felix. We'll give you our other awesome young pitcher. And also this other awesome young pitcher. Also, one of them has a torn labrum. The other one's on the minor league deal with an elbow problem. So do you think the Yankees' most recent experience with the Mariners makes them more likely, less likely, or does not change their likelihood of asking about Felix in the future?
I think it does not change.
All right, I also agree with you. So we can move on to the next time.
Yeah. But it would be really, really funny if while Jack Zarensic, I assume Jack Zarensic travels, he probably doesn't travel with the team, but I'm assuming for whatever reason that he's traveling with the team to New York. I don't know why, but it'd be really funny if he just came into Brian Cashman's office and be like, so, any interest in getting Felix? And then Brian Cashman would just give him that, like, that really weary look. Like, I know you're fucking with me. This is not funny.
The only expression in Brian Cashman's playbook?
Yeah, pretty much.
I love Brian Cashman for just being so he is, like, Kevin Towers, I think, was... Is Kevin Towers still... Yeah, he's a GM again, right?
Arizona.
But when he was at the Padres, he was just super candid. And, like, Bill Bavese was candid, too, but he was shitty, so it wasn't as fun. But, like, Brian Cashman's a decent GM. And he's just so honest about everything. It's like... So opposite Zarensic. Brian Cashman's like, yeah, I didn't want to sign Rafael Soriano. Whatever. Sure, I'm sitting next to Rafael Soriano at the press conference, but no biggie. Or, with so many different things that I can't recall off the top of my head, he's just like, yeah, he is a straight shooter, except with the whole mistress thing in his personal life. But I don't care about his personal life. I care about the baseball part. But I think, so you're Brian Cashman. I think a fun prank to play if you're Jack Zarensic now is to call up and do what you said, like, hey, would you be interested in trading for Felix? Because instantly what will go through Cashman's head is, oh, fuck, he's hurt. He's damaged. What is he trying to pull? He's trying to pull the wool over my eyes. Like, no, I don't want to trade for Felix. Well, all right, but, I mean, he's starting against your team. No, you know what? I thought about it. I don't want him. Shut out. Ah, fuck you. He's healthy. Jokes. I guess... A really bad idea if you're Jack Zarensic would be to get involved in playing trade Felix chicken, because maybe he's really bold. You know, like if you play gay chicken, then you just end up making out with a dude. This is all just television. But trade Felix chicken, like, I'll sign the papers. I'm going to do it. Wait, but why would the other side?
Right. It's a little different there.
Like, yeah, I'll trade Felix for all of your entire double-A team. Trading him.
I don't even know if that'd be a good deal.
Would you trade Felix for the Mariners if they were in another system? Would you trade Felix for the Mariners' top 10 prospects? That would be the big three.
Yeah, I probably would.
Knows what else?
I mean, I wouldn't, but I would be pissed initially. But I mean, a year later, I'd probably totally get over it and be like, "Wow, that was an amazing trade." Like, even if it didn't really work out, it's just like, well, but they gave him your farm system for him.
And then you kind of hope that it works out like that Bartolo Colon deal where you get, like, well, I guess the Indians didn't wind up with really Brandon Phillips. They gave him away, but
Or the the Twins Giants deal. I can't remember who that was for.
Joe Nathan and AJ and Booth Bonser for whatever.
And was that it? Wasn't there somebody? Wasn't like
I'm looking at it right now. So it was Bonser. Oh, of course, Francisco Liriano.
That's what it was. I was like, I knew it was one of the Johan Santana was the Rule 5 pick. I was like, was it Francisco?
It was Bonser, Liriano.
But I forgot because Liriano's all terrible now.
Yeah, man. So I really think that you guys should I've written posts before. It was like appreciate Felix, but like appreciate Felix because you look at Liriano and he's came up the same year, the most dominant early on. It's like, well, Liriano now is a complete mess. If I were a Twins fan, I would have zero faith in Liriano ever finding it again.
Yeah.
And, well, Felix is, we had a little bit of valid concern about Felix's velocity, still down. But by the way, his results are incredible. They're right in line with what he's done the last 3 years. Almost exactly. I almost wrote about this the other day. His numbers haven't changed, his results. And now he's gotten a decent sample of innings and opponents. So Felix is just unbelievable.
I haven't seen this from an authority source, but I've heard, I think, bits and pieces multiple times that Felix has been throwing a cutter.
So I was looking at this, and it's hard to know for sure, because when I was looking at the PitchFX graphs, the cutter is kind of what's being designated a cutter now. Is at the upper bound of where his slider was. So I don't know if he's always...
Well,
he's
like
always
all his pitches just are, it's just this giant blob of...
Right. So he's always throwing pitches like this cutter. Whether he's throwing it now on purpose or not, I don't know. But my suspicion, because we haven't heard anything from the media about Felix throwing a cutter, is that it's just a new classification of a pitch he already threw. Because if you remember, in the preseason, Harold Varner was like, what are your five... What's your best pitch? And Felix is like, all five of them. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a slider, it's curve change, and two-seam, four-seam. Didn't say anything about a cutter.
But then again, when was the last time he ever threw a four-seam, really?
Right. But I think he still knows it's in his back pocket. So until I hear something from the Mariners about Felix throwing a cutter, I'm going to assume that he's not. And a slider is a cutter anyway. So, whatevs.
I was just thinking it might make sense for why it seemed to be like a new norm for fastball speed for him. Is that like, oh, maybe he slightly changed his fastball, and it's not that he's hurt, he just changed it and it's getting slightly more movement and is miles per hour slower, and then it's like, oh, well, that's it, there's your explanation.
Yep.
I mean, not saying that is, but that would have been, oh, that would totally explain everything.
And of course, we've talked about this before, but it's really easy when you are talking about pitchers to put everything in buckets, but I mean, there's obviously a sliding scale from a four-seam fastball down to a slider. I mean, you're just basically rotating the ball in your hand, and so it would be, if Felix is just kind of gripping the ball in between, well, crazy shit happens to the baseball.
Yeah.
And if I'm Felix, I probably have all the confidence in the world that I can grip the ball however I want, throw something amazing.
Yeah, and his speeds aren't even that now. They're not even down that much. It's really kind of in his fastball, and that's kind of why I was thinking about that maybe he's just slightly changed how he throws his fastball, because his other pitches, the slider, the curve, and the change, I think like one of them is the same speed as it was last year. The other one's like maybe a half mile an hour slower, and the other one's maybe a mile an hour slower. It's really only the fastball that has like that 2 mile an hour drop.
Yeah, his curve is right there where it...
Yeah, so it's not... You would think if he's losing velocity, he's losing velocity.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think it'd be more or less consistent. Unless, well, I guess if he was hurt, the injury could affect different pitches more than other ones. Because different pitches put different stresses.
Yeah, but intuitively, if Felix were hurt, if there were damage in his shoulder or his elbow, I would need it to be explained to me why his curveball is still the same velocity.
Yeah. Yes,
exactly. And that doesn't make... Because it's... Even though it's a different pitch, the process is very similar. And
right. And also, least, when you think the curveball puts the most amount of stress. Like, it'd be weird to have an injury that only saps your fastball. The pitch that's basically the most straightforward thing to throw.
And whenever something like this happens, you wonder, well, is he exchanging some velocity for command? And who knows? Yeah. Maybe he is, because he's been good. I don't know.
Or pacing himself for endurance-wise.
Or pacing himself for endurance. I'm looking at... So his strike rate isn't higher.
Yeah.
But
that doesn't necessarily mean his command's worse or not better.
And so he's getting his ground balls back. They're coming back slowly. I think the issue early on is that, well, he was facing the A's, and the A's have the lowest ground ball rate as an offense in baseball. So even though the bulk of it is up to the pitcher, some of it is still up to the hitter. There was actually research done last year on this topic. I think it was roughly like a 2-to-1 influence of pitcher influence versus batter influence. Anyway, more importantly, Felix didn't have ground balls early. Dave Cameron was worried about that, which is fine. But then I think that was just about the A's and not Felix.
Yeah.
A's put everything in the air. They're like Kyle Seager, who, by the way, put everything in the air. Have you noticed?
I have. I haven't explicitly noticed it, but now that you say it, I'm like, yep, that does make, I don't want to say sense, but...
1/4 of Seager's balls in play have been grounded so far.
That's very little.
Yes. And is so I'm looking at his BABIP is fine. So right now, as we can just move into talking about Kyle Seager, I feel, as I've mentioned, I feel less horrified by Ackley's struggles and Justin Smoak basically being dead in a coffin by the emergence of Kyle Seager. Because I think even though Kyle Seager has kind of always hit, the expectation was that he would be kind of a role player. I think he would be in between, maybe like a decent star. But what he's been so far, at least, is he's actually been like a legitimate good
major league player. Starter. Yeah,
his defense has been fine, and his offense has been fine. So what I would like, and his power has been there because he's hit a lot of doubles. He's hit four. He's tied for the team lead in homers, which I know that's damning with faint praise. But he is on pace for, I don't know what, 20.
Yeah, in that range.
Not embarrassing. So what I wanted to ask you about, if you have any ideas, is so I think the concern with Seager at this point is that he's batted more than 100 times and he has 3 walks. Is that a concern to you?
A mild one. Because it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't go hand in hand with what I think is a bad approach. Mm-hmm. He doesn't swing at everything. It doesn't seem like to me. Although I don't really know. I haven't really like looked at how often he swings at pitches out of the zone compared to league average. Just you could probably look that up.
I looked yesterday. He has both of his swing rates are slightly above average, and he makes a lot of contact.
Yeah. So it's not surprising that he would walk very, very little, given that he makes too much contact. It doesn't come out of so much of a bad approach. It's not a Miguel Olivo path to making no walks. It's more of the Ichiro path to never walking, where it's, well, I mean, okay, you're making contact. You make contact well. It's hard for me to be concerned. It's 14 extra base hits and 17 singles. Like, that's an incredible extra base hit percentage.
Yesterday I was trying something, a post never came out of this, so now this is coming out of this. I went into everybody's play discipline numbers from Fangraphs of, you know, like qualified players, and I tried to find, using math, the player whose approach was the most similar to Kyle Seager, just based on like 4 of those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And guess the number one player. I'll give you 3 guesses.
Jesus Montero.
No. This is just 2012, by the way, not...
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know why I asked you to guess. It's Albert Pujols.
Oh.
Which you'd think would be awesome, except, you know, Pujols this year, which also is awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the player, so it was like Pujols and Jose Tabata was up there. So both of those players are actually struggling quite a bit. But there are worse players to be similar to than Albert Pujols, even at his lowest. But, of course, that also doesn't mean anything. I don't necessarily know if that methodology was selecting or anything, but basically I think what is more important than drawing walks is he swinging at bad pitches, and I don't think that Kyle Seager has visibly been swinging at a lot of bad pitches, so it's hard to be frustrated. Justin Smoak has swung at a lot of bad pitches. Jesus Montero has swung at, I feel like, a lot of bad pitches. Seager, not so much. He's hit the ball. He's hit the ball hard. A lot of line drives. He just sprays the ball around the park. I think he really is kind of what we wanted Jeff Cirillo to be.
Yeah. I'm going to call him the Sprinkler. That's my nickname for Kyle Seager. Because he sprays line drives.
That might.
All over the field.
Work. We just have to be careful that he doesn't become bad. As he could. Like, Michael Saunders was super exciting. And then, oh, no, the slump. He's not hitting the ball again. His double the other day was an accident, I think. But also, you could see it as encouraging. I guess ultimately Saunders has been slumping, but still he has a 113 OPS plus, so it's like,
yeah, it's nice that he had a play. He could slump. He had room to slump or whatever.
Like the whole idea is everybody's going to have peaks and valleys. Well, so what's the average? Oh, he's still, so far, still good. I've brought this up before, but I have faith. I guess now we're talking about Michael Saunders. That in my head, and this was getting a little ahead of myself, but I was thinking, so Saunders was a very good prospect. I don't think we overrated him. He was legitimately good, but he had adjustments to make.
Yeah.
He kind of fell off the radar a little bit. I thought he would get traded for nothing. He would just like get a new opportunity. And I thought, well, maybe he could become somebody's new Cameron Maben, where Maben was a big prospect, fell off. He got traded by, I think maybe he got traded a few times. He was with the Tigers and the Marlins, but he wound up with the Padres. And now Cameron Maben is like a legitimate center fielder, good defense, you know, good Padres offense, where he's not like a super awesome player, but he's a fine everyday player as a center fielder.
Yeah. He's their Kyle Seager.
Or their potential. He's their Michael Saunders now, if you believe what Michael Saunders is. So I thought, well, okay, so maybe that's what it is. And Maben just signed a long contract with the Padres, so he's like a regular player now. He's 25. So maybe that could be Saunders' path. But also, I know that's getting ahead of myself, because I still want to see more from Saunders. There have been signs of improvement, but he also seems to swing through a lot of fastballs.
Yeah, he does. There's a lot of swings and misses, but I'll take it with everything else.
Yeah, I mean, he has a lot of extra base hits.
Yeah,
too, which is cool. And I was so Saunders' contact rate is right on his career average, which you'd think, okay, so he's not making less contact, but also his career has been bad. So I don't know how much that matters.
It just feels like the quality of his contact's a lot better.
Yeah, and so if you care about this at all, so his rate of swings and pitches out of the zone, right on where it's always been, but he's swinging at more strikes, a lot more strikes, by something like 10%, not 10%, well, all 10 percentage points, swinging at more strikes than before. And you figure, okay, well, automatically right there, swinging more strikes, you're going to hit more strikes, you're going to make better contact, you'll get more hits, and that's what we've seen. He's hit the ball hard. So some encouragement with Michael Saunders, still striking out a lot, but also he's taken some walks. I think he's been somewhat selective. He just can't necessarily catch up to a hard fastball. Lots of people can't.
Right.
The point is,
velocity is so prized.
Basically, the point is with Michael Saunders, we have concerns, but also he's been productive, which we did not expect. So yay.
Yeah.
A player who has not been productive.
Justin Smoke. Yeah. I wanted to circle back because you were talking about introducing this segue into Kyle Seager, or about Kyle Seager, not into Kyle Seager. Oof, that would have been painful.
Oh, man.
Anyways, before I
sorry,
get too dark into that, well.
Hey, you want to talk about Kyle Seager's home state's politics?
No, I don't even know where he's from.
North Carolina.
I assume. Okay, I didn't know he was from North Carolina, but it doesn't surprise me at all.
In North Carolina, it would be illegal to make jokes about entering Kyle Seager. No politics.
Well, go ahead and just continue to make the jokes.
Justin Smoke is where I think you were going.
No, I was going to try and throw before getting to Justin Smoke. What you said was that Kyle Seager helps blunt the disappointments or worries about Dustin Ackley and Justin Smoke, and I wanted to separate those two because while yes, and Dustin Ackley's been a disappointment results-wise, I still don't feel any worry about him. Mm-hmm. Like he's nothing he has done this year has been like has dampened what I think he will be.
I will.
Although I would like to say ha 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 to the people who are like, why don't you project him for 5 WAR? Because you idiots, you don't just take 2 months of production and extend it all the way across, especially when it's, you know, ends up projecting the player to be 5 wins. Like, that's not realistic.
I'll put this out there before I let you continue. When I surprised myself by mentioning Jeremy Reed, that did kind of click in my head, and I thought, oh shit, that can happen. So that's kind of there, and I'm more aware now of the possibility that Dustin Ackley won't be that good, but I still, like you, have a lot of faith that he will be good soon.
Well, it's just like his process has really not changed. There's some troubling things where he's swinging more at balls and swinging less at strikes, but it's not a huge difference. But his contact rate is up despite the previous sentence. So that's, I mean, that's weird. His batted ball profile is fine.
Now, does he actually have a track record of being a slow starter? And if so, does that actually mean anything ever?
So here's the other thing. I was talking with somebody else, and we had always talked about how it seemed like Ackley, you know, as he was coming up through the minors, you know, oh, he's a slow adjuster or something, right? Because he was slow to start in each new league. But then he didn't do that in the majors. Mm-hmm. But then he's had a slow start this season, and I was like, well, maybe we misdiagnosed it. And that he's not a slow – he doesn't take time to adjust each league. Maybe he just sucks in April for whatever reason. Maybe he's just a slow starter because mm-hmm. all of his other minor league promotions were at the beginning of the year, I think. Maybe not all of them.
I think he got bumped to AAA in the middle of the year, and then he struggled.
You're right. He did.
Yeah, 2010, so, he was in West End for a few months, and he was good.
Well, whatever.
Well, so the first time Ackley went to AAA, right, he had twice as many strikeouts as walks. Second time, when he repeated AAA, basically the same sample, a hundred more plate appearances, he had 17 more walks and strikeouts. So it clicked for him when he repeated. The weird thing, of course, is that now Ackley's repeating the majors, and he's been worse, but he has this track record of kind of picking it up. So that is...
But I guess it's a track record based on a season.
Shut up. God, you're so negative all the time.
But what I'm saying is that I have no worry about him because there's like nothing that's changed. He's making more contact. He's even hitting more line drives. But his ball and play average is down 50 points, so that's kind of why he's hitting 240 instead of 280. And if he was hitting 280, he would look still not quite where we want him to be because we want him to get to that point where he's drawing more walks and strikeouts because I think he's got that kind of potential, but he'd be fine pretty much. I think a lot of it's born out of his 240 batting average, there's no real reason. I mean, he strikes out more than we want him to, but he doesn't strike out more than average. He strikes out at a slightly, he basically strikes out at the league average rate. Mm-hmm. So that does not warrant a 240 batting average.
And, of course, if he were hitting better, then he might see fewer balls in the zone, at which he wouldn't swing, and then he might be walking more, striking out less. So, you kind of wonder about the interplay between batting average on balls in play and walking strikeouts, because I wonder if pitcher approach changes, or if they just have a steady scouting report on a guy. I don't know. That would be impossible to research.
End of that. Now we can talk about how bad Justin Smoke is. So unlike Dustin Hackley, who concerns me not at all because his approach is the same and he still looks – I mean, he's always looked kind of silly sometimes swinging at some pitches, but he looks fine. He's still stinging the ball and all that good stuff. Justin Smoke looks almost irredeemable to me. He looks as bad as Michael Saunders did when Michael Saunders was bad.
Yeah, he's just about – I know – I think – For me, mentally, I have slightly more faith in Smoke than I did in Saunders, but that's really just because Saunders was a nightmare, and I assumed he was an automatic out. But with Smoke now, God, it's just no power in his swing, can't catch up to anything inside. He had the hardest hit ball I've seen him hit lately was a line drive foul. It's like, well, that doesn't actually count. That's who knows if you could have even hit that pitch fair. Slow, of course, obviously slow. And it's not like... With Carlos Figueroa last year, his approach was just terrible. But when he hit the ball, he could at least demonstrate that he could hit the ball really hard. Mm-hmm. So like, well, there's what that guy could be if he figured it out. With Justin Smoke, it's like, well, even if he had better play discipline, where is the power that you were supposed to have?
It's so weird. I mean, I was talking to somebody else who's never been a believer in Justin Smoke. And I was always more tempered about it, but I was just, what it really comes down to is it's so hard for me to reconcile how he was in April of last year with what's happened in the year since. Mm-hmm. He was so good in April, and it wasn't like hitting out of your mind. It was just like, oh, this is what he was supposed to be. I mean,
as a reminder for people, last April, Justin Smoke slugged .527. He had basically as many walks and strikeouts. He was just that good.
Yeah, and it's not... And it was trying to counter, like, you look back at his minor league numbers, he kind of, I mean, for was supposed to be a relatively slugging first baseman, he had almost equal walks and strikeouts in the minor leagues. So he's capable. It was that's just like reinforcing that that April wasn't totally out of the realm. I didn't think he was going to hold like post 1,000 OPS. I didn't think that's who he was, but that was like, oh, this is a good player having a good month. Not, what the hell has happened? Where did that go? Is he still hurt? If he's not still hurt, how did he lose it so completely?
Yeah, he's just come completely apart. And somebody mentioned to me that it's like he's swinging now like he was swinging when he had the bad thumbs. Of course, we assume he doesn't have bad thumbs anymore. So did he just like keep that swing? Did it become part of his muscle memory? Why is it still the case? This is one of those. I think Justin Smoke's a guy where you would start to pay attention to the hitting coach, like, fix him. This is what you're supposed to do. Make him good. Because, I mean, the scouting reports just raved. He was a top prospect. We weren't making this up.
No.
He was supposed to be good. He was demonstrably good for a little while, and then it came apart. And the injury thing, the thumb thing, made so much sense to me. It just fit so perfectly. I know it was correlation, not causation, but it looked like there was causation there. And now, it's like, well, okay, so is it his hamstring? That doesn't make much sense to me, because first of all, there's a number of reasons why that doesn't make good sense to me, and so
a mild hamstring should not be causing this,
and
otherwise you're never going to be able to play sports.
I mean people ask me every so often, so what's the deal with Justin Smoke? And I just don't know. What I would love to do is mentally fast forward. I don't actually want to be in September now, but I want to know.
Just want to like see the stats.
I want to see Justin Smoke's stats come September. I don't want to know what else is going to happen. I like surprises with all life sometimes, but with Smoke, I just want to know. I don't want to be patient anymore. I want to know if it's worth it to be patient. And so, because what I tell people now is, well, he's still young enough. I will give him the rest of the year to show progress, but I don't know if I want to see that in the minors now. I'm tired of seeing him.
Well, that's the other thing is he is still young, first of all. And what I remembered when I went back and I looked at his minor league stats to check out his strikeout and walk ratio was that he equivalently has basically spent one season in the minor leagues.
Yeah, a little
it's
more.
It's been spread over 4 years, but it's basically like 173 games he's played in the minors. Like, that is not – the guy has not had a lot of – and it kind of
– and he
you think back to how what minors. Happened when we traded for him in 2010. He went right to the Mariners and he was terrible. And then we sent him down to Tacoma and he got really good. And it seemed like maybe he kind of found his stride again. At this point, and especially with the fact that, speaking of not as good of a surprise as Kyle Seager, but definitely a mild surprise, or at least the same amount of surprise, Alex Liddy has been not a black hole. And he can field, which was really surprising. At this point, I'm totally fine with, you know what, let's give Alex Liddy 3 weeks at first base, not because I really want to see what Alex Liddy can become. I'm very surprised by his development, but he was coming from a way I basically dismissed him. I never thought Alex Liddy was going to be anything.
Yeah.
I didn't think his defense was, from what I'd heard, his defense wasn't good enough to hold up at third long term, and I didn't think his bat had his swing had too many holes in it.
Like Francisco Martinez, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. And he's.
Oh, man. That has been bad.
Yeah. But instead, Alex Liddy has shown, like, well, I mean, he can play a corner infield spot. And he can, it kind of looks like he can handle himself against major league pitching. So, he's kind of moved up to the baseline of where now I thought Kyle Seager was.
And in this hypothetical.
Which is infinitely better than Justin Smoke right now. So,
right.
I'm totally, like, I really did. They should send Justin Smoke down.
I think I would definitely like to see Smoke go to the minors. I don't care if that's humiliating for him or whatever, because right now he's embarrassing himself anyway.
Yeah.
And if you send Smoke down, I don't know who comes up. You could use a bench player. You can play Liddy often at first. You could also give Karp a few reps at first, and then you can play a little Casper Wells in left field.
Yes,
he's basically
absolutely
been forgotten. And Casper Wells could be a good, well, like a reasonable player. He's not necessarily just a platoon guy who never plays.
He's only a platoon guy because the Mariners platoon him.
And
nothing about his skill set.
I mean, so if you demote smoke, what do you bring up from Tacoma? Does it really matter?
I don't think it really matters, because I think what I would do is I would split starts between Karp and Liddy. I would basically platoon them at first base.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'd be bringing up somebody who would be on your bench anyways. So I don't really know who would bring up
Carlos Baguero.
They could. You don't need another backup outfielder, but you do want somebody to sit on your bench. I don't think they would do that with Baguero. So I'm not that familiar with Tacoma's lineup, but I would take like some 30-year-old journeyman.
Well, that would be Luis Rodriguez.
Boom. There you go.
Bringing him up. Well, then the 40-man roster concerns, so whatever. Basically,
there's never a 40-man roster concern as long as Yovanis Medina is still on the 40-man roster.
The important part is not who comes up, it's who goes down, and that would be Smoke. I am beyond ready. I think a lot of people are beyond ready for Smoke to go down. He is not getting any better in the majors. Or if he is, he's not showing any signs of it. And Eric Wedge has said, I'll just keep putting him out there. But Eric Wedge already demoted him in the lineup. Whatever Eric Wedge says, he has to say that he has faith in Justin Smoke, even though I'm sure that faith is wavering. Send him down is what I think should happen. Bring somebody up, and then see what you have in Alex Liddy. You're concerned about not getting him enough at bats? Well, here's your opportunity, because Smoke is taking advantage of his.
Yeah. Get Alex Liddy some playing time. Get Casper Wells some playing time. It does kind of hurt platoon-wise, because Justin Smoke's a reliable left-handed bat, and both Liddy and Wells would be righties, but whatever. Justin Smoke's not doing anything, so being able to run out 8 lefties against a right-handed pitcher only does you so much when they can't hit.
Man, Smoke is a bummer. So when I say that Kyle Seager makes me feel a little better, that's just because, all right, I didn't expect Kyle Seager to be much. So overall, it's a little less disappointed than I could be, but that does not mean Kyle Seager is not actually make my interpretation of Justin Smoke any better. If they are independent and Smoke is just, oh, God, what a catastrophe. And what makes me feel a little bit, actually, no, what makes me feel a little better is nothing. But wait, I guess we did eventually get John Jaso out of that trade, sort of, and that's neat.
Yeah.
Since we got him for, I mean, let's face it, now that Josh Lugie's gone, I'm really not too disappointed that he's gone. He was always going to be a nightmare to cover, and also, he was just a reliever, and what the Mariners got for him was a left-handed catcher who can hit a little bit.
Which and he's been bad. Lugie.
Is Lugie?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah, he got sent down because he had more walks than strikeouts and like gave up 3 home runs or something like that. He basically pitched 3 innings for Tampa, and then they sent him down.
And he's been terrible in the minors, too, so great. So he's given up as many runs as he has innings in AAA, so I think we can maybe just forget about Josh Lugie and let that whole episode go by and what the Mariners got.
And we got Blake Bevin out of it, too.
Yeah, well, okay, that's neat. It's not unuseful.
Right. But it's not like yay, but it is like, well, he's turned out to be a lot better than I thought he was going to be.
And didn't we get that like,
for somebody who nobody throws? We got Matt Lawson, who then we traded for Aaron Laffey, who then we released.
Sweet. But John Jaso. So John Jaso clearly has demonstrated that he has a very good approach at the plate. There's no getting around that. And
he can catch.
He can
catch. Dear God, Eric Wedge, he can catch.
He can catch fine. No, he's not terrific. He doesn't have an awesome arm. He's not awesome at blocking balls. He's not awesome at presumably framing based on the evidence, but also neither is Olivo. Olivo has a better arm, granted. Olivo's arm isn't fantastic, and the other stuff is shit. So play Jaso. Like, he's demonstrated now he can catch, he can hit. He's demonstrated he can hit lefties a little bit, or he's not like hopeless against them.
Yeah.
So now maybe you could sort of not understand, but get why maybe Wedge wouldn't have trusted Jaso at start. And plus, with Olivo and Montero, like, it's hard to find time. But now, Jaso's just seized every opportunity he's been given. Even when he's made outs a lot of time, he's made good outs where it's like, okay, now you've let Jaso kind of prove himself. Now, what's your excuse if you sit him all the time again?
Yeah.
There is none. No good one.
No. And I don't expect a good one. I expect Miguel Olivo, as soon as he's back from his injury, to go right back to starting 6 games.
Yeah,
out of every 7, and it's gonna infuriate me even more than it was when it was happening, because now you've had the chance. You had right in front of you for presumably 2 or 3 weeks of this team splitting catching duties between Jusseau and Montero and doing fine and hitting. And the pitching did not crumble. They didn't collapse under the no leadership that somehow happens from behind the plate during the game. The team is so much better off without him.
Maybe it's important maybe not be to be preemptive, man, because we don't know for sure how Eric Wade is going to respond. We can guess. But I guess Eric Wade did kind of take us by surprise when he batted John Jason leadoff. So maybe that's a sign of faith. So if Eric Wedge goes back to treating Oliva like he was, We will both be very upset. Several other people will be very upset in the way that we're not actually upset in life about baseball. But
it would make me about as more upset about any. It would be as upset about as anything I could get about baseball.
Well, except for like Felix getting hurt.
Yes, but I mean that's not actually happening. What I'm saying.
Yes, but there is with these position players. I mean, you could. I was gonna say you could bench Dustin Ackley every day, and it would make me that would make me more upset. Yeah. But John Jaso, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's not old. He can catch. He's left-handed. Good approach. Like, no, he's not a fantastic hitter. He's not fantastic at anything, but he's just good, and he's a part of the future. Because Adam Moore sure as hell isn't a part of the future, let's face it. And if Montero's maybe your catcher of the future, maybe not, you don't know if Montero can catch for sure. Well, you know who can is this guy who you got for...
Yeah, this could be your catching duo, your starting and backup catching duo for the next, like, 4 years.
It's just like the way that they're wasting Casper Wells. Like, he could be a good player.
He could be a starting left fielder.
Yeah, he has power. Like, he can hit the ball. Don't you want dingers?
And he can play. He has Mike Karp's offense with, you know, the ability to actually play defense in center field, too. Like, he could be a legitimately really good player in the sense that, like, a 3-win player, not like an all-star player or something like that, but, like, totally not a problem and an asset to the team. And we don't know because he never gets to play.
Yeah. Casper Wells has as many appearances as Munenori Kawasaki. Oh, also more appearances than John Jason just to piss you off.
Yeah, well, it wasn't about I want John Jusseau to get a bunch of plate appearances. I want Mikko Olivo to have zero.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, God, I just want Zorenson to be like, yo, you know what? You want to play Olivo? He's traded. No, he's not traded. He's just DFA'd. Fuck it. Yeah. We're not going to get anything for him anyway. He's dumped. But of course, you can't do that and expect to have a relationship with your manager going forward. So to whatever degree that relationship is important, presumably Jack Cerencik, or at least people in Jack Cerencik's ear, are like, hey, you know who's bad is our catcher. We should not have him anymore. We should take him away from the manager. Well, then you need to figure, I'm of course presuming a lot of things here, but basically he needs to go because I have no faith in Eric Wedge not using him all the time. As he has, because there are options now.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, it may be a little crass or tasteless or whatever, but that's why I was so excited with the injury.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I was wishing pain upon Miguel Olivo, but it was like, it forced their hand, and it was going to force their hand for, I was hoping, 2 or 3 months, at which point, by the time Miguel Olivo came back, he'd be like, well, there's no point in playing him. The season's, like, over, and he's a free agent to be, so... I thought that was kind of there was a legitimate chance that was basically it for Miguel Olivo, regular Mariner player, and then now it's like no,
he's fine. Yeah, of course he's fine from the horrible injury. And Frank Gutierrez is now battling everything in the world.
Yeah,
his pec's fine. Whatever. Well, now he can't get up and move. So fuck you. Just hang out and do nothing. Completely lost Frank Gutierrez. Yeah. Optimism.
Maybe he's not injured. Maybe he's just really lazy. Maybe he's just trying to, like, bilk the team. Yeah, I've got tuberculosis now.
Getting a hysterectomy. I got cramps, man. It's my time. Whatever, dude. God, you're queer in the actual definition of the word. Not the gay one. Although, well, no, we won't go there. Although, God, so what else do we, I just, the thing, what's difficult with a case like John Jaso is that you get, a lot of people will then talk him up. Like, hey, play Jaso. There's, of course, the whole free Jaso movement, et cetera, that's all over the internet. Jaso is kind of like a cult hero at Safeco now. He gets a lot of applause when he's around, because I think the only people left at Mariners games are the actual hardcore fans and the people who are wasted in the beer garden. but, so it's important to realize, no, the case, people need to understand that this isn't about John Jaso being amazing. It's about John Jaso deserving more time, being better, probably, than Miguel Olivo.
Clearly and demonstrably better than who was playing. That's it.
I mean, you better believe the fucking some intangibles if you think that Miguel Olivo is better than John Jaso, because they're just, what's the most important thing for any position player? Getting on base, right?
Right.
That's it. And Jaso can literally beat Olivo by like 100 points.
And is there any reason that Miguel Olivo's intangibles don't work from the bench?
Nah.
Pre-game, post-game, all that kind of stuff, all that preparation, the stretching, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, the bench players do it too. What leadership does he have actually squatting behind home plate or at the plate? None. Baseball's a very individual sport. The team-based stuff happens with the whole team. Doesn't have to start. Doesn't have to play. It's like, yeah, I'd prefer him totally off the team just because I don't, like you, trust Eric Wedge. But I have no problem with him being, if he had what John Jaso's role was before the injury, I'd be fine with that. If he wants to play once a week, whatever. Against a left-handed, like a left-handed starting pitcher, one time a week we give Montero the DH spot and Miguel Olivo starts at catcher, fine. Don't care. But no more than that. He should never play against a right-handed starter.
Nope. Nope.
And he should never DH.
So Olivo, for his career, right, against lefties, 790 OPS, good. Obviously, he doesn't walk at all, but like, hey, right, he can actually hit lefties. Righties, 660. This is his entire career. Yeah. 265 OBP. Of course, now he's older and worse. So, yeah. And that was like in some more hitter-friendly ballparks like Chicago.
Much hitter-friendly ballparks in some cases.
Yeah. Really just, it's beyond.
Yeah. And that was the other thing that kind of cheesed me off. When people were like, oh, what are you advocating for? What?
Watch your tongue. You don't want to.
Yeah. I didn't know what phrase I wanted to go with there.
That really fucked me off. Wow. You must have had a lot of fun.
Oh, good thing I wasn't in North Carolina. Some people came back with like, oh, you demand that they bench Miguel Olivo based on his 2012 stats? Like, what the fuck? No. Have you ever read this website before? No, that's not what we're fucking saying, you dipshit. And so, this isn't about a small sample size. Miguel Olivo is exactly who he's been. We don't. It's not 2012. It's 2000. It's 1982 to 2012. We know who Miguel Olivo is. He's no different than he ever has been. And that's terrible.
Worse, maybe a little worse.
Yeah.
Presumably, because it's
presumably worse because he's older. Like it's sanctimonious assholes. I hate when you guys do this and you're wrong.
Olivo's career, entire career, OPS plus 83, 17% below average entire career, includes younger days, includes peak. He's 33 now. He's just like, see, now I'm just getting worked up in the lather. This is a real, we're going to have a pother right here, if I can use that word better. I just wish that I could be more poco carante about the whole situation, but I can't. It just really brings out. I just want to carp about this. How many words can I use here?
Those are the only ones I ever remember.
Yeah, fuck, I can't even remember the. I have learned nothing out of this except fucking poco carante. God damn it. That's the one word I'm going to come out of this whole exercise having never forgotten. Jesus.
I never forget that word, but I often forget its meaning.
I can't because it's just so. It's poco, little, carante, caring. little.
Well, I don't know romance languages.
But I mean, you know enough. You know little poco, probably Spanish.
I do, but I think of the word. I think of the word as Italian. So, and I know Italian and Spanish are very, very similar. But for some reason, that little wire in my brain just does not connect. And so I think poco corrente, and I'm like, oh yeah, what? I'd never think of it as Spanish. Mm-hmm. I'll get there because I keep using it.
Yay! So if you like the word indifferent but need a synonym,
yeah.
Oh. Also, pocock is a word. I don't know why that's in my history. It must have been looking at bocock and that. Anyway, that's not what's important. What's important is Miguel Olivo not playing. So yay, he's ahead of schedule in his recovery. That's going to be fantastic.
I'm hoping he gets sent out in like a rehab for a couple weeks. I don't know why he would, but gosh, yeah, I really hope so. That would be something that Jurendzic could do to take him out of Wedge's hands without like pissing him off or directly confronting him about it. Be like, no, he needs to rehab. Oh, he's not hitting well. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, God, I would love
lingering power issues from the groin.
I just want to see what his walk strike ratio would be in AAA. I would love to see that. Like, oh, it's eight strikeouts per walk in AAA against people like Steven Schell and whoever's there. Jeff Marquez, except that's a teammate, but he'd still strike out against him. So let's see. In closing, I guess we're toward the end of this.
Yeah.
Which what's the last thing we want to talk about here? We could talk about so many things. I'd say we could talk a little bit about Brandon Ryan, I guess, because if you just want to point out that he's fine, that works for me. He's fine, right?
You know, I haven't even looked because I think he's fine. He hasn't interested me. I kind of assume he's fine.
He plays the kind of defense that you.
Yeah,
know
I don't. It's just like yeah, whatever. I mean, wow, whoa, God, he's hitting really bad.
Yeah, no, he's just hitting really bad. But like some of it, he seems like he's popping the ball up a lot, but I think he's always kind of done that.
He's popping the ball up a lot. His line drive rate is down. I mean, he's walking almost twice as much as he ever has, striking out a little bit more often too.
He has had two catastrophe offensive seasons before in 08 and 2010, but also we don't really care about individual seasons. We care about overall because that's what matters more. And just last year, he was okay. Hey, just last year, Brandon Ryan had the same OPS plus as Miguel Oliva's career.
Yeah. Huh. And I wouldn't even call 2008 a disaster year.
Well, it was pretty bad.
It was, yeah, but, well, I'm looking at, like, his WOBA plus was 90.
No. I'm just on Baseball Reference. It doesn't have that.
Yeah. Because his OPS was under 600, so that looks really, really, really terrible, but he also kind of reached on error a lot. He got hit a couple times. He didn't play that much is the other thing. He only had 200 plate appearances.
Yeah.
So, he, it wasn't as 2010 was absolutely a disaster. That was really bad.
Here's something that also, think about 2010. If you believe in wins above replacement at all, and therefore if you believe in defensive stats, which I totally understand if you don't, but I, like I've said many times before, I believe in them a lot more for infielders than for outfielders. Basically, if you believe in WAR, Brandon Ryan was still a pretty decent player in 2010 when he wasn't hitting. And this year, his fielding numbers are way up because, by the way, he's been amazing at defense already. Yeah. So, like...
Well, like I said, I'm certainly confident in team-based fielding numbers, especially mine, because I do correct for park effects and pitching effects and all that kind of stuff. And... Mm-hmm. The Mariners, as you went into detail on, reinforcing my point, the Mariners have been amazing at defending ground balls.
Yeah.
And you look at around the rest of the infield, and I'm not willing to divvy up individual credit on it, but it's just kind of, well...
Yeah, what makes sense?
It's
who do you think
probably
is
coming at least a lot from Brendan Ryan.
Yeah. Like, he makes just outstanding play. And so when... Like, he seems like... He's kind of prone to the occasional ugly error, lapse of concentration, you might say. Well, first of all, he only has one error this year, which I thought he had more than that. But he just makes so many outstanding plays. He's just such a throwback shortstop. And I know it's really hard it's a lot harder to deal with psychologically a bad hitter than a bad defender, because if a bad defender is just out there as one of nine people, a bad hitter is up there by himself looking bad. I know that's hard to deal with, but if you can just get over that and be like, he literally, well, he doesn't literally, but he does make up, he creates hits in the field.
Yeah.
So I know that that's just like a cliche point, but it's so true. And never has it been more clear than it has been with Ryan's defense lately. So
yeah, compared to,
if he wants to keep walking and making plays, that's fine with me.
Yeah. I was going to say it would be a lot easier to ignore his shitty offensive line if he wasn't batting second so often, Eric Wedge. But then on the other hand, he has a .277 open base percentage, which is shitty. But then Mariners, we don't have a lot of better options. Because at least he's walking.
If he just did what he did last year, which was, you know, not good, but fine. Throw in a few more walks. The walks thing is weird, but there was a point last year when he had a lot of walks.
Yeah, he started out the season with a lot, like taking a whole bunch of pitches, and then that went away.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ryan's 30. He's not going to figure out how to hit. He's always going to have this weird long swing and then look up for the ball when he hit the ball somewhere else. He's kind of as wacky a hitter as Eric Burns was.
Yeah.
But you can just hit all right, you know, make contact, walk a little bit, hit some line drives, and play defense. That's a good player. That's not a player that you bench from Munenori Kawasaki, who, by the way,
can't hit
at all. He is a child on the team.
Yeah.
He's not a child because he's as old as Brendan Ryan is, but he's a child on the team. He's older than Brendan Ryan. He's 31 years old.
Yeah.
That's funny to me. He's a mascot.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he looks so much older in hair. Because right now he just looks like a baby.
Yeah. It's fun, like going through this, really the only people that worry me or disappoint me or piss me off about this team are Justin Smoke and the impending potential gearing myself up to be prepared for the return of Miguel Olivo. Like everything else, I'm like, yeah, they're fine. Even Figgins doesn't bother me.
Yeah, now he's on the bench, whatever. He's always smiling and laughing
from
the time of his life because he's making money. Kevin Millwood doesn't bother me. I know he bothers a lot of people, but like he's a placeholder.
He's not terrible. Yeah, and he's a placeholder. He's not bad at it so
Brandon
far.
Brandon Lee frustrates me because he should be so much better, and he seems – I don't know Brandon Lee, but he seems like he's a complete Nimrod.
Yeah.
Like he should be way better than he is. But whatever, he's fine as a closer, and I like –
the results have been okay. Macro results.
In front of him. Yeah. I'm super glad to have Sean Kelly back throwing fastballs and sliders and just rooting for the Nashville Predators, which is cool because, like, hey, all right, somebody's talking about hockey.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe Iwakuma will get more opportunities since he was good last time. Have a little Kuroda. And then, you know, the prospects start coming. So it's just Smoke and Olivo and... Well, it's the last year of Olivo's contract, and the Mariners have catchers, and then Smoke, well, if he bombs, then, well, that sucks, but at least we'll know. It's this in-between that's really hard, to not knowing what he's going to be. If I knew right now that Justin Smoke was going to be shit, well, I would start getting over it, but I just don't want to give up yet.
I guess you could start giving up, and then if he turns out not to be, it's, well, yay.
Yeah, then it's just Michael Saunders, right? Except less likable, because Michael Saunders is awesome, and Justin Smoke seems like I wouldn't like hanging out with him much. But that's not really fair.
He seems probably just bland to me.
Yeah, he seems like he would want to do things that I don't. But, like, I'd be fine with fitting.
Probably. He just seems like, to me, and this is, I don't know why you get these kind of impressions. It's based on nothing. But it seems to me like he wouldn't be bro-y about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I don't think he'd be a douche at all.
Yeah. He'd be like, no, I like to go hunt and fish. You want to go hunting, fishing? And I'm like, no thanks, Justin. He'd be like, all right. And he wouldn't be like, yeah, let's go fuck up some deer.
I'm going to shoot him. I want to see some brains, deer brains.
Yeah.
That's not you. That's John Rocker. Okay, John Rocker, put your pants back. Why are you having sex with the deer carcass, John Rocker? This is the worst. Why did I agree to go hunting with John Rocker? Why are we hunting people, John Rocker? It's the most dangerous game. No, you are the most dangerous game, John Rocker. You are an insane person with a shotgun and bloodthirst. This is the worst. I should at least be writing an article about this for like the New Yorker, but instead, now I'm just an accomplice to manslaughter is what this is. And I can't tell you no because you're John Rocker with a shock. Anyway, Justin Smoke is not like John Rocker, so at least he has that going for him. Smoke, Ackley, Ryan. Smoke is South Carolina. Ackley's North Carolina. Seeger is North Carolina. But basically, they're Carolina boys. They're the three Carolina boys. They're all the same. I don't care if there's differences.
Yeah, I was gonna. When we have that infield, it's like this is the most white bread infield ever assembled, and that includes the Athletics and the Blue Jays, which is amazing.
And the Athletics have a guy with glasses, so think about that.
Yeah.
But of the three, Smoke, Ackley, Seager, the Seager seemed like the most fun because like Ackley just seems like he would plan around watching paint dry, like he would make it an afternoon, right? Like, look at that paint go. Just, like, sipping water, tap water.
Yeah.
Just growing my beard, looking at
distilled.
Like, Dustin Ackley probably loves errands to maintain his house. Just like, oh, we need new pipes. I'd like a, God, can't think of the commercials anymore. But so there's a commercial that would repeat over and over last year. Grover, got to go to Grover. Like, Dustin Ackley probably fucking loves going to Grover. Like, yep, just maintenance, lamps.
Gonna put down a new layer of topsoil. Yeah, good times.
Oh, so Seager seems like he's probably, yeah. I don't know. This is just projecting, making up personalities because we don't know.
It's fun. I like doing that.
Yeah. Just Sean Figgins seems like he'd probably be a lot of fun, too. Seems like I'd probably laugh a lot with Sean Figgins.
Yeah. I feel like he probably tells a lot of stories.
Yeah.
Like makes fun of people. And he's like, whatever, probably, I'm Sean Figgins, who cares?
Probably openly makes fun of you, but in such a way that you know that he's just messing around.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem mean. just ascribe personalities to players that we don't know at all. What we see of them from scripted commercials and a baseball game. Totally fair. Oliva would be a lot of fun to drink with, just telling you stories about his fucking grandkids that he has.
It would not be fun to drink with him because I get more emotional when I'm drunk.
Yeah,
I probably shouldn't be near Miguel Oliva if I'm drunk and impulsive.
Probably a great father figure, and also he's like super strong, so if you try to do anything, he would just shake his head, wag his finger, like, no, you don't want to do that. Also, Jesus Montero seems kind of dull. But, well, you know, I saw this the other day, so the commercial where he catches the fish, right? It's really, I don't like that commercial at all. I think it's too easy. But the very end, you know the commercial I'm talking about.
Yes.
The very ending, when Carl Wells comes up, is like, did you catch that? Jesus Montero's like, I guess. Like, I think that's really well done. That very end is like a play on words, and the way he says it is clever, and it's like he doesn't know what's going on. So it's a really good way to end what's otherwise a lame and nonsensical commercial.
Yes, I agree. The ending really saved that commercial for me.
Yeah. The Smoke one now is just kind of embarrassing for everybody.
Oh, yeah. So bad.
Yeah. Like, why not just get a bat from, like, how is that tree better? For wood. You didn't even select it scientifically.
I think it's supposed to be like, oh, look how strong he is, but then,
well, maybe if you... Oh, well, I know I wrote about this the other day, but maybe if you used better bats that you didn't just punch down, maybe you fractured the wood when you punched the tree down in the forest. It's just irresponsible.
Didn't even yell timber.
The next year's Justin Smoke commercial should just be 30 seconds of Justin Smoke sitting in a chair, and then finally, at the 28-second mark, a light bulb appears over his head, and then that's it. And then you hope that happens, and if it doesn't, well, you just take out the last 2 seconds, and it's just, well, here's 28 seconds of Justin Smoke sitting in a chair. Because he's benched. God, I just want to make Mariners commercials, and then it would just end up being insults of Mariners, and then that would be removed from duty. God, that would be a fun job, though.
Very temporary job.
Yeah. Ichiro's knife skills, which he probably has.
That would be a good one. Kind of maybe vaguely racist.
Yeah, probably vaguely racist.
All right, Ichiro, in this commercial, we want you to drive this drift car. And then you're going to pilot a dive bomber into Hawaii. What?
In this commercial, Miguel Oliva, we want you to change Munenori Kawasaki's diaper. God, that's a weird 2-year age difference.
It's so awesome. This team's a lot of fun.
It is. And it helps that even when they lose, they're not getting destroyed yet.
Right. We'll see this weekend in New York.
Yeah, but even, yeah. I'm just not that afraid of AL East anymore.
I'm afraid of Yankee Stadium. I'm afraid of watching one of the Mariner pitchers pull a Kobe Lewis and give up 5 home runs.
I wouldn't be too... I mean, he did give up 5 home runs. He also gave up 5 solo home runs and had 12 strikeouts. So, like, there are worse starts to have, I guess, sort of. That would be, like, a total... That's basically Steve Delabar's season is what Colby Lewis did. Is, like, only strikeouts and dingers.
Yeah, but that's also really bad.
Yeah, no, it's also bad. But I guess if you limited them to solo dingers, well, Millwood's going to give up 5 runs in any start he makes anyway, so might as well make them interesting. That's not true. That's horrible.
Right.
But... Yeah, well, we've been going for more than an hour, so I guess we're done here.
Yep, let's go call this one.
All right, so we'll be back to do other stuff. As for a podcast, we'll see. We'll see where the winds take us. Based on today, there is no wind. That's not true. There's wind everywhere. I'm talking about wind. I'm just going to stop. Goodbye.
Bye.